And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Our guest today is Lance Hunay-Twitchell, a Tlingit scholar and a Tlingit language teacher. He's also associate professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast. Wasaieti, how are you?
Goodness cheese. It's nice to see you. Nice to hear you.
I think we're going to have a wonderful show. Later on in the show, you're going to be sharing some Tlingit words of love to us. But I wondered, do you have big plans for Valentine's Day this year?
Yeah, we're going to decorate some cookies with our kids. So our kids had a wonderful virtual Valentine with some of their classmates. And so I really appreciate our teachers who coordinated a contactless exchange of Valentines and pre-wrapped candies. So the kids were getting all juiced up on sugar and having lots of fun, and they're excited for their coming 5-day weekend, which we thought it was a 4-day weekend, but it turns out it's a 5-day weekend. So we're preparing ourselves for it.
Boy, sugar and a holiday. Wow. What a wonderful, potent combination. Well, I wanted to start off, though, by talking about Nathan Jackson. He is a well-known Tlingit carver, sculptor, kind of an icon. And I understand that you have been taking part in Zoom sessions with him, being mentored by him. How is that going?
It's been an adjustment. So we had worked on an application with the Native Arts and Culture Foundation to do an apprenticeship. And it was such a wonderful opportunity. I've been a huge fan of Nathan. Yehiadi is his Tlingit name, of his artwork for a long time. And we're the same clan, so he's my uncle. And it just seemed like such a natural fit. And then we were awarded the fellowship, and then the pandemic hit. And so we had to sort of figure out how to adjust. And so, he recently turned 80 years old. And he's a pretty old school person as far as technology goes. So he wasn't excited about the Zoom thing, as he likes to call it, but he's done so wonderful. So we would talk sort of sometimes ideas and projects, and we had laid out this sort of plan. And then I would make stuff and show it to him. And his wife, Dorica, is so wonderful about printing things very large so that he could take a look at them. And then, you know, it's not always perfect. Sometimes trying to line stuff up in front of the camera. And so I'll be like, to the left, up, down, you know. But most of the time it works so well, and it's so wonderful to get some, it's hands-on, but from a distance. So hands-on feedback from a true master.
Well, most people know you for your efforts to revitalize the Tlingit language, but you do have another life as an artist. And perhaps you could give us an appreciation of Nathan Jackson, because I do want to mention that he just won a $50,000 fellowship from the United States Artists. He's one of 60 fellows that were announced this month. And he says, I can't believe it. He says he's going to use this prize money to clean out his studio, which is filled with wood. And of course, you know, you can't take time to do something like that if you are having to make a living creating art to pay your bills. But anyway, maybe you could give us an appreciation for Nathan Jackson as an artist and why he's going this route.
Yeah, so one of the things that I've been doing, so there was also some additional funding to sort of do a little bit of a book project with him. So I've been talking to him just about how he got started and how he sort of ended up becoming an artist. And a lot of it was work with portraits, and he was at the Institute of American Indian Arts. But like looking at the history of his life, what's really fascinating is how his work is truly all over the world, and how incredible his work ethic is and his ability to sort of envision these very large projects and to get them done and to get them installed in a variety of places. So I first started noticing his work. I was probably 20 years old when I became really interested in Northwest Coast arts and what it was and how to do it. And I would just start drawing things, and I realized there's some stuff I must be missing because it doesn't look like what I see. And so the first time I had a chance to meet him, he showed me these resources and told me about these things that were out there by a wonderful scholar who recently passed away named Bill Holm, who had documented a lot about how the artwork is put together. And then so using that as a starting point, then that allowed me to start showing stuff to Nathan. And one thing I really love about working with him is just how he can give you critique, but then it doesn't feel too rough. He'll say things like, "Oh, you don't see this very often." And that's a cue to sort of like examine what you're doing and figuring out how to continue to improve it. And especially to move from, I got really comfortable in a digital medium. And so getting out of that realm and getting hands-on, working with wood, working with paint, and really thinking about making one-of-a-kind pieces. And so Nathan, he worked in Haines for a long time. And then he ended up down in Saxman, and they have this carving shed there, and that's where he produces most of his large works. As he's 80 years old too, like sometimes it's nice to just stay close to home and not have to get in the car and drive down to the carving shed, you know, in the middle of winter or whenever. So next, right next to their house, there's a workshop that he's been trying to envision for quite a few years. And so to be able to just sort of step out right there and not have to commute so far is a really wonderful step. And then as he sort of thinks about not only his own legacy, but what he's going to be leaving behind. And those are some of the conversations he has with me as an elder. And for a long time, Tlingit elders have always sort of, when they start to see where the ending is, they always kind of think about these terms. Joe Hodge taught us a phrase that a fish will bite the riverbank so that its children know where to come back to after they become, you know, full-size salmon. And so he said sometimes the old people will say, "I've already begun to bite the riverbank." And so we're going to keep on, we're going to hold on to Nathan for a long, long time. But just thinking of his life and his work and how he's shaped like Northwest Coast, Northern Tlingit art, he's just amazing, just incredible.
You know, I called him up on Sunday, and he and his wife, she was there in the background, and we talked with her as well. But I never expected that we were going to talk about wood. And he talked about the need to have a good supply of it, and he gave some examples of some big projects he had, like at the Juneau Airport. And people ordered wood, and it wasn't the right kind, and so he had to go there to get wood. And he's just learned that he has to find his own wood and be ready.
Some of the conversations that we've had is about, like, what types of trees, and where can you go get vine maple, and where can you go get good alder, and so now I have to think about, like, do I even know what this tree, you know, I think I'm pretty good with trees, but then, you know, would I know what a yew tree would look like if I saw one? And the answer is no. So now we got to figure out all this. It's interesting, the further you go into the art, the more you realize there's all these different layers to stuff that you need to learn.
Nuances. And before we play this interview, one of the things he talks about in the interview is making bentwood boxes and needing a certain kind of wood for that. But maybe you could tell us a little bit about the traditional role of bentwood boxes.
Yeah, so the bentwood box, what we call a shakht, there were several different varieties. So there are ones that you make a bottom and a lid for. So you have a single piece of wood makes up the sides, and you'd make these three kerf cuts in it. Then you could steam it, bend it around to itself, and then usually sew, but sometimes use pegs to put those corners together. And so the ones with the lids, if you got a big chest, those are often containing some of your at'u, your regalia, the things you want to keep safe. Then there was other kinds that they would make that would be a little less decorated, and those are ones that are going to hold food. So they can hold water. You can cook in them. Basically, you would put water in, and then you would put hot rocks, and that boils the water, and then you put your food in. And you can also transport your food for trade. And those ones, you would just make new ones every year. So you'd say, okay, we're going to put our food in this one, and we'll just kind of toss it out, right? And then there were other ones as well, smaller ones for holding grease. And then there were ones for holding berries, seaweeds. There was bentwood boxes for all kinds of things. And one of the really neat things, when you really look at the classic chest, the big bentwood chest, I guess one other one is called a bucket. There's a bucket one for carrying water and stuff like that. But the chest, there would usually be a design on one side that has what we call a single eye, and a salmon trout head is usually the eye. Then the other side has a double eye, and it's kind of a transformation piece. What was really neat was you'd have one side that faces out on a day-to-day basis, and people sometimes bump into it and the light shines on it. But when someone's coming over that's a guest, you turn all the boxes around. And then this side that's really safe and protected and doesn't get worn down, that's what they see. So you kind of know if you're important because they would turn the boxes around for
so
you.
So a bentwood box made by Nathan Jackson, how special would that be?
Oh, that would be, it'd be priceless. Just getting some of his work. So the bentwood box, the panels, just incredible. And especially when you think about his legacy, and the stuff he's done over his decades of doing monumental art, and then also doing dancing and playing music as well.
And we'll find out about that a little later. But anyway, here's my conversation with this great artist, and we're talking about wood. Yes, wood.
The biggest interest I had was mostly getting my shop worked on. And so that was moving stuff around and getting stuff out of there, because I had a whole bunch of wood piled up in one corner. And so I took the wood and stuck it underneath my house. And so I still have a lot of wood around. I just couldn't believe how much wood I have. A lot of boards that are fairly good for bentwood boxes. Very doubtful that I'll be able to do as many boxes as I'm thinking, but the wood was available. At least I'm selective. I can be able to go through it and pick out the better ones for any particular project that I have going.
Is it important to have a big selection of wood in doing what you do?
It is, in a way. I've had many different projects come my direction. And when they do come, at least I can be able to say that I can be able to do that. I have a lot of material.
Do you have to have certain types of wood, certain grains that the wood grows?
Yeah. And for bentwood boxes, yellow cedar is generally a better wood to work with. It's pretty well straight grain, and also it's a much harder wood comparatively to red cedar. Though I have plenty of red cedar box material, in any project, whether it be a totem pole or the more selective would be yellow cedar for bentwood boxes, and it's much easier to carve.
Given that you make such big things, from totem poles to large bentwood boxes, that you would have to have a large supply of wood.
Yeah, so that's just the way it is.
That's just the way it is, huh? May I ask how old you are now?
Yes, I'm 82.
You seem like you are very productive in what you do, but does it cross your mind that I have X amount of time in life and these are the things I need to get done?
I think if I let that cross my mind too much, I'm ready to retire. So I try not to let that cross my mind too often.
But with age, do different priorities come about?
I think with age, it's kind of one of those things that you understand that everybody slows down. And last year I had an issue with my leg, so I had to get that taken care of. So I have a new knee. It's one of those things, AGE syndrome comes about and you understand that, hey, you're just like everybody else.
So I guess what you're telling me, Nathan, is that with the AGE syndrome comes a sense that you're not immortal.
Right, right.
So what are your passion projects right now? What are you working on?
I'm working on a clan hat. Usually amongst our people, we have what is called a shadakur, and that's an indication of what clan you're from. So this one is a raven hat. I'm doing a raven hat. Also, I'm working on a small pole.
So what's on your I must do this list in the coming years?
I have a book called The Pie in the Sky book. As soon as I get done with the hat and the small pole, look at this list and maybe call the person. Are you still interested in what you wrote down in my Pie in the Sky book? They'll probably come call back and say, well, we ended up taking a trip around the world. We had a real good time. But I'm sorry, we're not going to do that at this point, maybe later on. I can understand that.
So you just go down the list then, and is it a long list?
It's fairly long. I mean, it's pretty long.
In that pie in the sky list, is there a personal project that's near and dear to your heart?
I don't know. We got rid of an eagle design that had been hanging around for a while. And then finally, a fellow wanted a small bentwood box. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. I had people from Klukwan that were family that took me in. This family had a son, two sons, and one of them passed away. He called me up and said, do you know if anybody would do a bentwood box? I says, hey, I'll do it. Because they wanted his ashes in there. Didn't charge him anything, but I did three of them. And so I had this bentwood box, small bentwood box, and I just sent him two. I sent him two boxes. So he was like a brother to me. When I wasn't an artist, I was looking at being a fisherman. He helped me get jobs in Haines. And this was after I came out of the service.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn that you got your start in art fairly late.
The starting of this whole business was probably an occurrence that happened to me wanting to be a fisherman. This was after I'd been in the military for 2 years.
So how old were you when you took up the career of carving?
I think I was about 25, right? No, less than that.
But it wasn't like out of the blue you learned how to carve.
Well, the person that taught me or got me started or challenged me was my great uncle's stepson. That particular person had tuberculosis, had one lung. He was an amazing fellow. He knew how to work on radios. He understood carving. In fact, he challenged me to do little tiny poles. with a pocket knife.
So your carving career started with just a pocket knife?
That's correct. I carried pocket knife, a small pocket knife, for a long while.
So your carving began with a pocket knife. And when and how did you graduate to bigger tools and bigger projects?
Probably in 64, I ended up doing a poll or being involved in a poll with a bunch of guys working on totem pole at the World's Fair in 64.
And where was that World's Fair?
At New York. New York. And one of the things that they did was they had me dance, and they had a recording of our songs. They'd play this thing, and I'd be up above, high above the World's Fair. There's a little platform there, and I'd be dancing according to the song. But what would happen, people would go out and nobody would come into the turnstile. And so they had to change everything and have me come do a spiel to draw people in. I was still in regalia and calling these people in. And so that's what I ended up doing.
So you didn't wind up carving there after all?
Not as much. I ended up doing this for quite some time.
How do you feel about it now, looking back on that?
It's history.
Can you imagine him at the World's Fair in 1964 in New York City? And it kind of shows you the times that they really didn't understand how precious Native cultures are.
Yeah, just incredible. And then also his travels all around the world as well. So we were in Hawaii and I saw a totem pole of his and we were talking and I was seeing if he could help me get an ad so I can have an ads. And so he sent me one and the wood came from Sweden. They had these yew trees in Sweden and they said they were going to cut them down so that they can sort of have a better view of the Alps. And he said, oh, well, those are yew trees. What are you going to do with the wood? You know, so he's always thinking wood, like as a carver, like it's so, and it's so neat to spend time with him and to visit and to just sort of try and think of that wood carver mentality so that you see the world a little differently because the world is full of materials that you could turn into artwork.
Well, one of the things that most people don't know about Nathan Jackson is that he's quite the singer. And you've had some experience with that.
Yeah. Nathan is a singer and a wonderful harmonica player. So he's got a whole set of harmonicas. Both he and Dorica are
wife.
Devout. Yes, his wife Dorica are devout Christians, and they're in a band in their church, and so she plays the viola, and they play wonderful music. And so there was a retrospective, I guess it was a while, pandemic time. It's hard to remember when things occurred before the COVID lockdowns. But there was a retrospective at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. And Nathan was there talking about his work. And, you know, it was wonderful to look back on so many things he had done. And at one point, he just pulled his harmonica out and started playing. And I recorded it and put it on Facebook. You know, I mean, he's so talented in so many different ways.
Well, his wife, Dorica, sent me this very old recording. It's kind of scratchy, but it's fun to listen to. And, you know, he kind of, as a singer, surprisingly, here's a Tlingit carver. He sort of has a Dean Martin-ish Frank Sinatra kind of style. But we're going to play Blueberry Hill.
Blueberry Hill, where I found you. the willow plays a sweet melody, but all of those vows we made were only to be.
Isn't that great? I'm back with Hune Lance Twitchell, and we're going to have some fun speaking some Tlingit terms of endearment. But I just wanted to say, you know, how wonderful that is that Nathan Jackson can sample from all cultures and be wonderful at everything he does.
It was kind of a trend among a lot of Tlingit peoples, like in these previous sort of generations. My grandfather worked on a railroad, tied up boats. He was a boxer. He played guitar. And it was just like there was a huge list of things. They would just do all of it. He played basketball. And so and I really like that, to think that you don't have to pick one thing. You could do lots of things. So there's these concepts like jack of all trades, master of none. And I think that stuff is limiting to, for some people, they need one thing to focus on, but I think most people can be good at lots of things.
Well, we want to take some time out to practice some terms of endearment in Tlingit. And we're joined in the studio, so you have some students here besides me trying to pronounce these words, by Cheryl Snyder. She's head of KTOO's arts and culture team. And of course, she was the person who pushed so that we could have Tlingit lessons once a week with you. And that is turning out to be the highlight of our week at the station as we learn new words. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello, Hune. So nice to be with both of you this afternoon.
Hi.
So we want to get started here and practice some words, because people, I'm sure they're going to hear these and they're going to go home and they're going to whisper these sweet somethings to their loved ones. So we got to get a head start on this.
If you really want to impress your sweetie on Sunday, tell them I love you in Tlingit.
Here we go. We'll go through a few of these. So this is a collection of phrases that were put out by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, just for Valentine's Day is coming up, and you can express your love in a bunch of ways. I also made some anti-Valentine's Day cards, but we'll maybe save those for another episode. So the first one, yeah, to say I love you. That's a really good place to start. So to say I love you, I'll say it and you folks can repeat. You say Ichsechan.
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 And then to say love, you say like as a noun. So love, Kusachan.
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 Well, you've got that real hard K there.
Yeah, we'll call it a back K. So the Tlingit goes back pretty far into the mouth, and so there's some sounds that can be kind of tricky for some folks.
So I know you said your kids might be making cookies this weekend, and I'll bet you they will be heart shaped. So we got to know the word for heart.
So the word for heart is teich.
Cheryl, you want to be brave and go first?
It's that underlined X sound that is so hard for me. Teich, yes. Teich, teich.
So this underlined X sound, it's sort of like a deep snoring sound, right? That's maybe how we could think of it. So on its own, you go, like, you know, somebody snoring. To try and make that snoring sound without using your lungs, and you got to push that out of your throat, then you get.
My husband tells me I snore all the time. It should be easy for me.
Problems at night, right? So every night I practice these sounds. My wife lets me know about it.
Say it one more time. Heart.
Heart is teich.
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 Teich. So before we run out of time, thank you, Cheryl, for joining me with us. I didn't want to be alone in this.
Well, I look forward to, after spending the full semester with you, Hune, doing a much better job saying these terms of endearment in Tlingit.
You know, one thing you could clear up for us, because we've been wondering, that the word for white and snow are interchangeable. And so we wanted to know how to pronounce it. So could you help us with that?
So, yes, snow is glate.
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 Yep. And then the color, to make it a color, you would add a verb right after it. So you'd say glate yachyati.
Glate yachyati.
Yachyati.
Now I know why it's the tradition to apologize in advance in Tlingit culture.
There's going to come a time, maybe 10 years from now, where you're going to just hear these sounds all over the place.
Well, I did want to play more of that interview that I had with Nathan Jackson, because it came at that time of the interview where you say, is there anything I forgot to ask you? Is there anything else you wanted to say? And he said, I want to talk about my wife, Dorica. So here he is.
A very, very important aspect to this whole business was meeting my wife, who does Chokat weaving, as she entered my life being a teammate. She was a painter in most of the projects that I was involved in.
So it's Valentine's Day is coming up. Do you want to share your love story with your wife, how you met for Valentine's Day with us? So how and when did you and Dorica meet?
I think it was 72 in Anchorage. And there was a native show that was going on. And they asked me to come up and dance. And I told them, I says, well, I don't think I could do that unless I got gloves. And I noticed that they had gloves. They had to wear gloves when they're dancing. So they gave me gloves, and so I was obligated already. So I started dancing, and I copied. Being a dancer myself, I copied what the Eskimos did. They kept one foot down and they kept the beat with one leg. And so according to the drum. And so I was doing that whole business and doing motions that I didn't know what they meant. And so then out of the blue, I hear somebody say, that's Nathan Jackson? And I heard it. That's Nathan Jackson? Well, I thought, she must be impressed with me or something. She took classes at the University of Washington through Bill Holmes. And so Bill had shown pictures of elderly carvers, famous carvers. And Bill said that Nathan Jackson was his favorite, a Tlingit artist. And so that's the end of that story.
I was studying textile design at the University of Washington, and my professor suggested I take some classes on Northwest Coast Indian art. And so to get more design, you know, different design experience. And I got taking classes from Bill Holm and got really interested in Northwest Coast Indian art. And when I found out Chilkat weaving was a dying art form, which it was in the early 70s, I decided to combine my love of weaving with my interest in Northwest Coast Indian art. And I always say, with all the arrogance of a 22-year-old, I decided I was going to learn Chilkat weaving.
So in other words, you see this man dancing and you cry out, it's Nathan Jackson.
No, not quite like that. I was expecting somebody this age, in their 80s, late 80s, you know, late 70s, early 80s. I thought Nathan Jackson was that age. So I walk in there and I see the King Island dancers dancing. I was volunteering at the museum. And I asked one of the gals that worked there, which one is Nathan Jackson? And she said, that's him right there. And I'm like, that's Nathan Jackson? Not that's Nathan Jackson. It was like, I was shocked. I was expecting an 80-year-old guy.
So was it love at first sight?
No, he had a girlfriend. I just wanted to talk to this famous artist. And it, you know, it took a while. It didn't work out with her, fortunately for me. And then we got together.
So how many years have you been together?
Well, 47. I moved to Ketchikan in 73 and we got married in April of 74. So
it
wasn't that long.
What finally brought the two of you together after that initial meeting in Anchorage?
I always say that we had two matchmakers, Bill Holm, because he's the one that told me about him. You know, that's how I found out about Nathan. And then I always say we have the same matchmaker that Adam and Eve had.
So tell me why you love this man.
He's not proud. He's not arrogant. He loves the Lord. He's kind. He's generous. He's giving. He takes really good care of me.
So Nathan, why do you love this woman?
I don't believe that we really got into a real scrap, yelling at each other type of deal. You know, there are issues that a lot of Native people go through. And so being that she's supportive, I know I could be able to go over there and be trusted in what I do. So that's pretty important.
Yeah, we really trust each other and we're really committed to each other. When we first got together, he was kind of into the party scene a little bit. He was kind of coming out of it, but he still liked to go out and dance and stuff. And I was just wasn't my thing. And he said, if you're going to be with me, you're going to have to learn how to dance. And so many, many years later, fast forward to maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, yeah. I'm teaching this Israeli folk dance class and he decides he's going to take it just for fun. And then he's in there goofing off all the time. He's an excellent dancer. He could do it, but he'd just goof off to make all the other ladies laugh. And then I swatted him on the rear and I said, well, if you're going to be with me, you're going to have to learn how to dance.
So what comes around goes around.
Right. Yeah.
We've been talking about what you, Nathan, call the AGE syndrome. Can I ask you this about love? Does love get better despite the AGE syndrome with AGE?
Well, I think living this long with the same person, everything becomes not going uphill all the time. but taking a glide and having fun. And so that becomes like taking a ride on the snow, just having fun. Anytime that you have fun, sometimes out of the blue type of thing comes about. So
I think the longer you're together, if you've got a good relationship, it just grows deeper, you know, as time goes by.
And we have one more Nathan Jackson song for you. It's called Funny Valentine.
It's kind of hard to be up here and be nervous. Although, since it's a romantic song, I guess I better get with it. You are my funny Valentine. Sweet comic little Valentine. You make me smile.
So that's A Funny Valentine by Nathan Jackson, doing his best to sound like Frank Sinatra, I think. I want to go back to Hune, Lance Twitchell, just for a wrap-up of our afternoon of Valentine love.
Yeah, goodness sheesh. Yeah, thinking about Nathan and Dorica. So Nathan is from the Shukach Adi clan, and Dorica is Dakloedi, and I'm from the Shukach Adi clan, and my wife is Dakloedi. And long time ago, my great-grandparents, my great-grandpa is Shukach Adi, and my great-grandma is Dakloedi. And so they had an arranged marriage in a little church in Skagway, a Presbyterian church. And there was a time among Tlingit people where it wasn't about courtship. It was like, okay, you marry that one. Okay, you marry that one. And so we've come a long ways in terms of how things go nowadays. But my great-grandparents were married for over 70 years. And they're really close to each other, really close. And so I think it's good to just find someone that you can spend your whole life with. But I also know that sometimes people have hard times too. So that's the reason why this year I made the anti-Valentine's Day cards, because sometimes your message you might want to send to someone isn't always about love. But at the same time, for those who do, like even just loving one another, loving your family, loving yourself, there's a lot that you can find in our language and in our culture. And so I really love to share those things. My great-grandparents, Kashtushik and Ankadachtsin, Clan Dakloedi claimed the killer whale, and my great-grandpa passed away about 1972, and then great-grandma held on for a few years, but she was really lonely. And so when it came her time, my grandpa was down here in Juneau, and he said, clean my truck up real good, because we got to bring grandma home. And so his daughters, my mom and aunties, really cleaned up his truck real nice and brought it down to Juneau. And great grandma was wrapped in, she had passed away, and she was, they were both from really big families, really big people. And so when they wrapped her in these blankets and they put her in the truck and they put the truck on the ferry. And from the time the ferry left Juneau to when it got up to Haines, where she would be buried next to my great grandpa. There were killer whales cresting in front of that ferry to take it all the way back home. So I think about things like that when I think about the longevity, about spending a life with someone, about building families. And also I think about Kahun Ish George Davis, who told me, just put love and kindness in your heart. Maybe the ones, if your life goes out of control, maybe the ones you are kind with, they'll come to help you. So we think about these things and what our culture shows us and what our language shows us. Whatever your love language is, I hope you're enjoying it at this time and that you're spending good quality time with the people around you and that you're giving love and kindness to everyone you know.
Well, those are beautiful sentiments to leave us with as we head into Valentine's Day. Thank you so much, Lance Hune Twitchell. We have just loved this hour of conversation. Thank you. Gunashish.
Yeah, it's awesome. Gunashish.